Welcome to the Open Adoption Project. This is episode 114. We're the Nelsons. I'm Lynette.
And I'm Sean. And in today's episode, rather than talking about The Orphan Train, which we were planning on releasing today, we actually are going to release a different conversation that we had with a really good friend who's an adoptee. And she asked that she could be anonymous in this conversation, but our conversation with her will revolve around the book, The Girls Who Went Away.
Yes. So The Girls Who Went Away, the full title is The Girls Who Went Away, The Hidden History of Women Who Surrendered Children for Adoption in the Decades Before Roe v. Wade. And it was written by Anne Fessler, and Anne Fessler was adopted as well. And so she felt compelled to start compiling these different experiences that different birth mothers had in this era right after Roe v. Wade was passed. And so she talks to all of these different mothers who relinquished children for adoption, just gathers their stories and shares them in this book. So it's just a collection of tons of miniature memoirs is how I would explain it. And it's so compelling. It's an incredible book. And I don't feel like there really needs to be a spoiler alert for this conversation.
Right.
Our friend who we talked to shares a lot of her personal adoption experience and weaves it in with some different elements from the book. But I don't think it's something that you need to read the book before you listen with this episode.
Yeah, and I loved listening to your conversation. And as I was going through and editing, I was really intrigued by her story and actually the role that this particular book played in her reunion. Mm-hmm. Was very interesting. So look forward to hearing about that.
Yeah, so we'll just jump into this episode. We're really excited to present it. Right, we are here on the podcast with my friend who was adopted. We're going to keep her identity anonymous for this episode, but we are so grateful to have you here to share your experiences. And we're going to talk about the book, The Girls Who Went Away by Anne Fessler.
I'm excited.
Yay! Okay, so Anne Fessler was also adopted too, which I think is an interesting note. We'll talk about that more mm-hmm. as we dive into this. All right, so as we talked about doing this episode, you requested to do this book. Is there a reason behind that?
Yes. I discovered this book in kind of an amazing way. And it was really pivotal for me finding my birth mom and finally having the courage to search her out. Because I was 49 years old. Wow. No, sorry. Back up. I was 40 years old
okay.
when I found the book. And I, do you want me to tell you the story?
Yeah, please do. I want to hear. Yes.
Okay. So when I was younger, I'm 59 now, but when I found out I was adopted when I was 5 and I was totally fine with it my whole life. Never had any abandonment issues or yeah. never felt like my mom wasn't my mom. I just always loved my parents so much and never really dwelled on the fact that I was adopted. But as I got a little bit older, when I hit high school, I knew that I wanted to potentially find my birth mom someday or just yeah. have some more information. And then again, in college, it sort of hit me again. And I got a little bit of information from my mom who went to the adoption agency. And that's kind of a whole other story. But by the time I was 40, I knew I really, really want to find her. But I'm scared. I don't know if I should. All I want to do is yeah. thank her. All I want to do is see what I look like. I don't necessarily want to have a big relationship with her. And so our family, we have 5 kids, and we were taking a vacation to Nauvoo, a driving trip. And I had finished reading this book, just a random book. I don't even remember what it was. And we had 4-hour drive ahead of us. And I was like, oh my gosh, I need another book to read. I was just in that stage of my life where I was reading a lot. And we were in a little town that had a Barnes and Noble. And I was like, okay, need to stop the car. We're going to the Barnes and Noble. And I'm such an indecisive person. And it takes me forever to pick out a book. So I literally said a little prayer before I went in. Please help me just find a book fast, and the right book that I need to read. I want a meaningful book.
My goodness.
Please help me just find a quick book. Cause all the kids were in the car. It was just rushed situation. So I walk in the Barnes and Noble and I mull around for a second and I look down at the table and there is The Girls Who Went Away. I'm like, what is this? And I mean, adoption wasn't even my adoption and my search and all of that was not really on the top of my head at that moment. But when I looked down and saw the book and saw what it was about, I was like, this is my book. Like I knew, I'm going to buy this book. And I started reading it and I literally could not put it down. Like it completely changed my entire perspective about my birth mom. And I always thought, oh, she must have been such a selfless person. How wonderful that she would, she found out she was pregnant and she would relinquish me for adoption because she wanted me to have a good life. You know, all of these things that I thought about adoption and why someone would give a baby up. I know you don't say that anymore. What do you say?
Agencies will usually say
place a child for adoption, not give up. Yeah. So that's a generational thing, I think. Yeah, that's anyway how they said it. But so I started reading this book and it was just so shocking to me how every single story, they're all stories written by women who relinquished their babies before Roe versus Wade. They didn't have any other options. Their rights were really kind of just taken from them as soon as they announced that they were pregnant to a parent or a family member. And it just completely changed my perspective of what if this happened to her? What if she went through this? I've got to find her. I've got to find her and find out if she's okay. It kind of became more about her than me.
Yeah.
I suddenly became really worried about her. So, but I don't think I would have pulled the trigger and started the search if it weren't for the book.
Oh my goodness. It gives me chills. It really does. Wow. So you're right. Throughout this book, it is just heart-wrenching to read these different accounts and experiences that these mothers had. So many of the mothers in the book told about how different staff in homes that they went to give birth or other places that they went would use different techniques like mind control kind of, right? Like that assign them pseudonyms and say they couldn't use their real names, or they would isolate them and they couldn't be around other people. They couldn't see their family or their parents. They couldn't see their boyfriends, like the fathers of their babies. And they would tell them that if they didn't go through with adoption, that they were going to owe this facility thousands of dollars for staying and for the food and for medical care. And so there was a lot of coercion that went on in these different accounts. Did any of these tactics stand out to you? Did you feel like any of these were personally relevant in the experiences that you've seen?
Absolutely. When I so to kind of give you the timeline, when I read the book, I think it was about 2005, and I came home from that trip and I knew that I was going to start a search. So I got on the computer. The internet was a little bit kind of newer then, a little bit, and I found registries for adoptees, put my name on all the registries that I could find, put my name on a registry for the birth hospital that I knew my birth mom went to. And the only reason I had that information, that I even knew the hospital that she was, where she had me, was because there's just a lot of kind of little interesting things that happened throughout this whole process for me. But when I was in high school, I dated a boy all through high school, and his dad owned the law firm that handled my adoption. And so my boyfriend went sneaking through the files and found my paperwork and found the name that I was given at birth. So I didn't know if it was the birth mom's last name or the birth father's last name. But, and I also, and it also had the hospital name because I was born in Illinois, and Illinois was a state that had sealed adoption law, like really tight sealed adoption laws.
Wow.
And so that was really lucky for me that I had that information to go
that
on.
Connection.
So when I was doing the, like getting online and putting my name on these registries, hoping maybe there was a connection, or maybe hoping my birth mom was looking for me too at some point. That was just my place to start. And what happened after that was kind of miraculous. We, I got an email within like 2 weeks from this woman, and we'll call her Michelle. And she said that she had seen my name on this registry looking for my birth mom, and that she had it like a job helping people. Like she used to work for the state, and she would help people search for their birth families. And did I want her help? Well, we were going through financial issues at the time. I had no money to spend on anything like that. And I was kind of skeptical. Like, I don't know. I just, somebody out of the blue online wants to help me. I don't know. I was just kind of skeptical. And she's like, no, I won't even charge you. It's fine. I just really like helping people. And so we started developing a relationship, and it was just by emailing back and forth. And she started kind of searching out things because I had her name. Oh, I had not her name, but I had what I was named. I had a last name, and I had the hospital, and I had a little bit of other information that my adopted mom had gotten from my from the agency. So the agency that handled my adoption, when I was 14, my mom went, and because I was really curious at that point, and got me this 2-page typed out little bio of my birth mom, my birth dad, you know, 5'4", age 22. So she was 22 years old. She wasn't a teenager. Sorry, I'm going off on all these different directions, but I'm actually going to come back. I think I know where I'm going here. So anyway, so I had enough for her to go on to start kind of going down the trail of finding her. And we got to a point where, and I didn't know where she was from. She only knew where I lived presently. And she said, okay, I need to order a obituary. I think it will lead us to your birth mom for sure. Like, but I need to order this obituary. And it's like $20. Can you send me a check? And I'm like, sure, no problem. I'll send you a check. And I said, so what's your address? And she gave me her address, and she's from this tiny, tiny, maybe population 200 farm town in Illinois, where my aunt and my cousin have lived my whole life, where I would go visit their farm, and my cousin was the postmaster. And I'm like, you're from this town? And she, and how, like, do you know? And I gave her my cousin's name, and she's like, oh yeah, of course I do. She's the postmaster. So I just thought, like, what are the chances I get online, this random woman finds me and offers to help me for free.
Yeah.
And she knows my family. She know, like, it was so amazing to me. I even called my cousin who knew, you know, I was adopted, and told her that I had found, like, that I had met this person that knows her and that she was helping me. Anyway, it was just such a, like,
that's
crazy coincidence. So anyway, we got to the point where she was pretty sure that she had my birth mom and her location and address and everything. And she said I needed to just write a letter that was very straightforward, just info, like my name, the day I was born. Mm-hmm. If you'd like to have contact with me, I think you're my birth mom. This is how you can reach out to me. And said, just put a stamp on it. And here's the addresses to the couple of addresses that I think might be her. And I chickened out. Like I couldn't do it. And so that was around 2005. And then it was like 7 years, 7 or 8 years later, my son was having health issues to the point where I needed to find out if there was anything health issue wise. Like it became more not just wanting to find her. I needed to find her because I wanted to know medical history too. And also to clarify, like why I chickened out, I realized like this is such a big deal. And I had 5 really busy young kids, and I had a really like busy church calling. And I just was like, I can't handle one more emotional thing in my life right now. And my mother-in-law had cancer, and I was taking care of her. So much was going on in my life. I was like, okay, now I have my birth mom's potential name. I could find her, but I can't do this. It's too much. Like it's too heavy.
Well,
I can't
have to be in a place where you're ready.
Yeah. Like, and I just realized as much as I want to be ready, I'm not ready.
Yeah.
And so I put it on the back burner. 7 or 8 years later, I dug up the woman that helped me find her, like old emails. It was kind of a miracle. I found her email address and she still was there. And I said, okay, here I am again. Like, I think it was 8 years later. And she said, well, you're in luck because Illinois has changed their open adoption laws, and you can just write the state and get a copy of your birth certificate.
Wow.
And so long story short, I know we have a limited amount of time. I did the letter thing, sent it, return receipt, got a message or got the return receipt back about a week later. My birth mom's husband signed for the letter. So I knew that she had it. And I waited for her to reach out to me. And about a month went by and she hadn't reached out. And I was sitting in my car waiting for my son. He was in a doctor's appointment or like a therapy appointment for these medical issues that he was having. And I was like, I'm just going to call her. I had done like a people search and found what I thought was her phone number. And I just picked up the phone and called her. And I was thinking about the book and everything that I had read. And I really wanted to know like what her experience was if I had an opportunity to talk to her. So I picked up the phone, called, her husband answered the phone. And he said, she's not here right now. Can I take a message? And I started to go into, gave him my name. I sent her a letter. I don't know, you might know about this. And he's like, oh, she just walked through the door and handed me the phone, and she answered the phone. And I just said, hi, it's me. I'm the one that wrote you the letter. And she immediately said, I'm so glad you called. I've had the letter on my nightstand for a month, and I've just been too scared to pick up the phone and call you. And before you tell me anything, I just want you to know, have you had a happy life? Have you had a good life? And I want you to know that I loved you, and I didn't want to have to give you away. And I immediately started bawling and was so relieved, like that she had that perspective and that she was so kind. And we immediately hit it off and talked on the phone for about an hour. And she told me, well, I don't remember if it was that first conversation. I did find out about my birth dad, which was really exciting news to me. I said, what about my birth dad? Like, do you know him? Like, do you know where he is? And she was really embarrassed and flustered and said, well, I graduated from college and my parents sent me and a friend to Europe for 6 weeks. And I was in Paris and I had a fling with a French boy. I'm like, wait, what? Like, say that again. And anyway, I found out my birth dad was just a French romance in Paris. And so that was really meaningful to me because I've always been obsessed with France. I'm an artist. And when I paint, I would listen to French music, French food, everything. Like, I've always been obsessed with France. So I felt like, okay, that makes sense. But anyway, so we started talking about, we ended up talking every month for about an hour at a time, like for 3 years. But she told me, this is getting back to your original question. Oh my gosh, the roundabout. She said that when she came home from that trip, she told her mom that she was pregnant. And she was from a fairly like upper middle class family. She had one sister and her mom was extremely upset and didn't tell her dad. Her dad lived to be in his 90s and never knew that she had a baby. They sent her and she was 22. It's not like she was 15.
Yeah.
She was 22 and I think that's one thing that she felt really guilty about. Like, I was 22 and I didn't have any rights. I didn't, like, they would not let me, there was no way I could keep you. Like, they just sent me away to go live with their sister in another state. And she was with her sister for a little while. And then she had to enter one of these homes for unwed mothers, it wasn't even a they called it a hospital, but I think she was sent to a hospital next to it, but this was strictly for all the girls that got pregnant out of wedlock and were sent to live in this home together. She said they could only call each other by their first names. They couldn't know each other's last names. And they had to do like cleaning and cooking and just helping take care of the place.
So they weren't there to take it easy and rest.
And she said they were just like, she said the counseling was just like a shaming session. It wasn't counseling.
Wow.
And she said some girls didn't even get to see their babies. She said she got to hold me and they kind of forced her to sign the relinquishment papers. Like, she just didn't have a choice.
So heartbreaking. I imagine. So how was this experience for you as a mother at the time that you met your biological mother? You were a mom. I imagine
it was heart-wrenching. Like, it was so heart-wrenching. And it made me realize, like, just how wrong it was back then.
Yeah.
You couldn't get birth control. And so, unless you were married, and your parents didn't explain anything to you.
It was so taboo. Yeah, no one would
talk about it. Girls barely even knew what was going on when they got their period, let alone like they get pregnant. And one of the stories I thought was so haunting was the girl who went to her mom and said, how are they going to take this out of me? She didn't even know. She was 16 years old and didn't know how a baby was born.
Yeah.
Like, she had no idea. And then her mom just shamed her. Like, it's coming out the same way it went in. You know, and just horrendous treatment.
So much trauma for those
women. Yeah, so much trauma. And so my birth mom had me, and then she went back home to a dad who didn't even know what had happened. And trying to semi keep this confidential. I don't know if she'll ever hear it or not. I feel like I have to be careful because she is still very, very secretive about it. She went on to have two sons and they don't know about me. She hasn't told them. And it's been now 10 years since I found her. And she ended up cutting off communication with me because I did an ancestry DNA and so did her son, one of her sons. And we show up at the top of each other's lists as like a potential sibling, first cousin.
Yeah.
And she's just said, I can't, this is too much. It's too heavy. I can't, this is stressing me out. I can't talk to you anymore.
Well, and with the perspective of this book and reading all of these other women's accounts, I can see there was so much shame and so much stigma. I feel like it would take so much time and therapy to get through this. And
so much therapy. And you don't even, I mean, they didn't get any therapy. She said she came home. They went on this trip to Brazil for 9 months because her dad was working there. And she said she sat on the beach and cried every day. And her mom never spoke of it again.
Oh my gosh.
Like never, ever brought it up again.
That's so hard.
And her sister didn't either. And then when she told her sister that I had written her this letter and found her, her sister just said, you better be careful. She's probably looking for money. And she just like,
that's heartbreaking.
Yeah. Oh, wasn't even supportive at all of the fact that it could be like a good relationship and good closure for her. Yeah. And, but still it was still more just shame. So she's, so that's why she hasn't, I think hasn't told her sons because she's just worried of how they will react. And I'm sure they wouldn't, they have the mindset of a modern outlook, not the 1950s, 60s.
There were so many accounts that really struck me. The one that is coming to mind right now, there was one mother, she was married to the father. Do you remember this one?
And no.
Her mother-in-law signed the papers. And I was like dying when I read this. They were all horrific.
Yeah, they're all horrific.
But just so unethical. Just literally taking rights away from women who were adults.
Yeah. And they made it impossible for these girls. Like I was going to say, they couldn't get birth control. So, I mean, hormones are going to happen.
Yeah.
And girls are going to get pregnant, but they really had no choice. I mean, they only offered birth control to married people.
And it was with husband's consent or something.
Yeah. With the husband's consent and the church was so involved as well.
So crazy.
And it was such a status thing, that you had to uphold your reputation and your place in society, and you just tarnished the family but yet I don't know, it's really interesting because I was just visiting with my mom, who's 91 now, and she was saying how glad she was she grew up in the 50s and what a great time it was. And I said, yeah, except for the girls that got pregnant and had to be sent away.
Mixed bag.
And she said, that's true. I had a friend in high school that got pregnant, but I still talked to her, but most people didn't. I'm like, wow. Like that.
Wow.
That was her generation. So
hard. And I remember other accounts like that where people would go back to school after, like as a teenager, right? You give birth and go back to high school and then you feel like this different person and nobody talks to you about anything that happened, if they talk to you at all.
Yeah.
It's just...
Well, and I thought it was interesting too, like somebody was saying how like these families were so... they felt that people would say all of these mean things about them. Mm-hmm. Well, and that's what they were doing to their own children. Like they were doing the thing that they were afraid would happen to them as a family.
So sad. Yeah. You're afraid everyone's going to ostracize your child.
Yeah. And they're ostracizing their own child.
Sad.
It was so sad.
It's heartbreaking. Yes. And I mean, luckily it seems like adoption practices have come a long way and we're doing better, but I feel like it's still so important to read about this and know that it wasn't that long ago that this is how
it really wasn't. And
are we making sure that we're working toward better practices continually?
I do remember it would have been in the 80s and I was a teenager. This was probably when I went to my mom and said, you know, I'm kind of curious about my birth mom. And I remember her taking me to it was called like a birth triangle meeting or something.
Okay.
It was like there were birth moms and there were people that adopted, like adopted parents, and there were adoptees.
Okay.
I think it was called a birth triangle.
Some kind of meeting.
Yeah, meeting that we went to. And that was that was just, you know, kind of a new thing. And that was in the 80s, which was only, you know, not even 20 years after. I wasn't even 20 years old when I went to that meeting. So at least like things had started to improve in my lifetime.
Yeah, more connection between everybody. Interesting. Did you go back or was that like the one time?
I feel like we only went the one time, but
yeah. Interesting. I feel like in adoption, there are so many misconceptions, and you've talked about this, how a lot of the time in society, we look at adoption and assume that the mothers are like young and teenage moms, right? Or that's usually. And what Anne Fessler, the author of this book, said was that of the women that she interviewed, the average age that they were when they had their baby was 19, which technically is a teenager, but that's an adult.
Yeah, 19 isn't, I mean, when you're 19, you think you are an adult.
I mean, really?
you are. Yeah. It's not, it's older than you would think.
Yeah. So are there other misconceptions that you've encountered as an adoptee?
I think, I don't know if this would fall under misconception, but I think people assume that adoptees have like abandonment issues and some do, like some really do. It's true. But I don't think everyone does. I think if you are a birth or if you're an adopted parents. Is that what you say? Adoptee. Anyway,
you can say whatever you want.
Parents who adopt. As long like it, I love the open adoption thing now.
I love it.
And I am just happy for the fact that I was told I was adopted. I know there are even people still that exist. Remember, I had a friend in college that said, if I ever adopted a child, I wouldn't tell him until he was 18. Like, that is the absolute worst, most damaging thing you could ever possibly do.
And it implies that there's something wrong.
Yeah, like that you had to hide
being adopted. Yeah.
And just telling your children as young as possible and just making it a part of who they are and how they came to you and how important and special it is that this was the path that got them to your family, and how important the birth mom is in the whole process.
And that she loves them.
Yes. That it was a loving decision.
But loving, yes.
I mean, I feel like now the decisions are even more loving. Like then I think like in my era, sadly, so many of these birth moms weren't given any choice at all. Like they weren't part of the process. Their parents just made the choice for them in these horrible birthing homes and stuff for unwed mothers. But now at least like these women who realize that they aren't able to care for the child and I think it's probably a really spiritual process. Like they realize that they're meant to have this child for another family. Like,
and
somehow, like I can't even imagine like how hard and the sacrifice that is, but and a choice that they make to do that.
It is so hard to.
But I was told like one thing, not told, pondered, and somebody said this, and it just rang true to me. That had my mom and dad been able to have children, they weren't able to, my spirit would have been born to them, was meant to come to them.
Yeah.
And so my birth mom, like, was just a way for my spirit to make it to my mom and dad. I would have looked differently had they had me, but my spirit would have been the same. And I always loved that. I love that. And I really do believe that, but I do feel a connection to my birth mom because.
Of course. And I think that's the goal with the open adoptions, right? Like, you see, there's all of this love, there's all these connections, and it's okay to have two families or three families, mm-hmm. or, you know, like, it's okay to have.
And it's not a threat to anyone. I think that's a big misconception, that if you have an open adoption, that you're somehow vulnerable to your child loving the birth mom more than you, or having a connection to them more than they have to you. And I think that's
a common fear that we
get. Yeah. Yes. And I think that's a misconception.
Yeah, absolutely. So do you feel like reading this book changed any of your understandings or how you saw adoption?
It just made me so incredibly grateful for my birth mom and everything that she had to go through. I love the adoption process. I think it's so incredible. Like, my parents weren't able to have children and they adopted me and my brother and we became a family, and I'm forever grateful for that. And luckily my birth mom was able to go on and have a life and have children and get married. But the trauma that she had to endure and the shame and guilt that she carries around is just a product of her generation. And I'm really, really grateful that things have changed and have gotten so much better, and hope it continues to improve.
Me too. Absolutely. So I have a quote here from Anne Fessler, the author of the book. She said, "Mothers who are considering an adoption plan must be able to do so without coercion and with full knowledge of services and support available to them. I think most people imagine a very young teenager when they picture a surrendering mother." We've been talking about this. "But the majority of surrendering mothers today are in their 20s. Only about a quarter of them are in their teens. Women must be given adequate time following the birth of their child to decide whether or not to follow through with the adoption, and reasonable time afterward to revoke consent." And we've been talking about how we feel like the adoption community has gotten better. And I feel like that's what she's highlighting here too. Do you feel like there's any areas where we still need to improve?
I don't know. I have a friend who's adopted 4 children, and one of the babies, she had for 3 months, and the birth mom came back and decided to take the baby back. And that for her was just like losing a child, and really, really hard. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know, like,
so hard.
Because you have to honor the birth mom and her right to maybe change her mind.
Yeah.
But I don't know what the right time period
is. That's so
is.
Hard, right?
Because you want the newborn to bond right away with the adopted
and
parents.
Yeah, and ultimately that's what we want our focus to be, right?
Yeah.
On the child, and like, how can we help them? What's the best option?
Yeah, I think having like the best of the best counseling available to the birth mom while she's pregnant and going through the process, so she is as sure as she possibly can be.
Yeah.
So no one gets a baby ripped out of their arms, you know, after they think that it's going to be theirs.
Yeah. It's so hard. Is there anything in the book that really surprised you?
Well, I remember the first time I read it, it all surprised me. Like, I don't even think I had any idea. Like, I really had no idea. I think it's so valuable for people to read and understand what it used to be, like what women had to go through.
Absolutely.
So.
And the author, so we talked about how she was adopted, and she said that she waited to find her own birth mom until after she wrote the book. She didn't want that, like, influencing how she went about these interviews and collaborating them and putting them together. And I thought that was so interesting.
That is, that must have been hard for her to put it on the back burner
I
and to
imagine.
compile, and then to find, like, to find out what her story was going to be, because not all reunion stories have a happy ending.
It's true, which
I
is
mean,
so hard.
you don't know what you're, what can of worms you're going to open. And especially the women that did go through so much trauma and shame and guilt and never healed from that, and have, are still carrying probably some mental health issues or addiction issues or whatever that they had to turn to deal with that pain.
And I don't think any of these mothers seem to really receive help
No.
after placement, right? Like, they weren't,
Mine didn't.
no one was checking up on them or, helping make sure that they were
No, she had to
coping.
like pretend she was a completely different person in front of her parents, that nothing ever happened, that she didn't give birth to a living human being that she got to see for 5 minutes, and she had to just never talk about it again. Like, how do you do that? That would just eat away at your soul. Like, I
Absolutely.
don't know. So
Ugh.
wrong.
But I do feel like for me, as an adoptive parent, as I read this book, I feel like I was already empathetic toward birth mothers, but I feel like it changed it and just like opened these floodgates
Oh
of,
yeah, me too.
yes, just compassion and feeling so protective and wishing I could go back and
I
help them. And
know,
yeah.
I know. I really wish my birth mom could read a book, but she's 80 now, and I think it's too, I honestly, I think it's too painful for her.
Yeah.
Like, I think it, she wouldn't have anyone to sit and cry through it with, and
Yes.
deal with all of those big feelings.
Yeah.
So,
Well, and I feel like that is a big takeaway for me too, that we all need so much support and help, and how can we go forward and be better supports to others?
yeah, and be, I think a lot of people judge the open adoption still to this, like, that's something that our society's dealing with now. Like, don't, why would you let the birth mom be part of your life?
There's so
And
much stigma still.
yeah,
We have a long
that
way to
we have
go.
a long way to go on that one. Luckily we've overcome the stigma of being an unwed mother, but let's work on the open adoption thing.
Absolutely. So, how did you feel about the book overall?
It's one of my top five books of all time for me. And I think it's a really interesting read for anyone, whether adopted or not.
Well, and it literally changed your life, right? Like,
It literally, like, I was led to that book so I would find my birth mom. Because I don't think, I mean, I wanted to. I thought about it, but that was like, okay, I've got to do something. I've got to find her so I can
yeah.
potentially, like, give her some closure and let her
That's
know
so
that I'm
beautiful.
okay. So.
Well, it gives me goosebumps. It's such a beautiful story. All right. Thank you so much for sharing your experience with friends.
Sure.
Anything else you want to talk about?
I will say my birth mom, even though we don't talk anymore, we text a tiny little bit, like maybe once a year. I'll wish her happy birthday or happy Mother's Day. And she lost her husband, 2 years ago, and he had dementia. And at one point I reached out with a text and said, how are you doing? I know it's so hard. And it was all during COVID and all of that. And she said, it's horrible. This is the second hardest thing I've ever done. I'm
Oh
like,
my
and that just made
goodness.
me cry.
That's wrenching.
Yeah. So. was meaningful for her to say that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Sure. I
so appreciated hearing your experiences.
Hopefully it made sense. I didn't ramble too much.
So good. Thank you.
Well, we wanted to give a huge thanks to our dear friend who was willing to share her experience. And I hope this episode didn't disappoint. I thought that her experience, some of the takeaways that she shared, and things that I learned were just super impactful. So I'm so glad we got to meet with her and for her to share her experience.
Yeah, this was a really impactful discussion to have and just so meaningful. It was incredible to hear this person's adoption experience and reunification experience and how this book influenced it. And I really enjoyed this book too. This book is one that I've been wanting to talk about and share on the podcast for a couple of years. It's, I think, one that everyone connected to adoption should read. Like, it is the first book I recommend when I talk to adoptive parents who are scared of open adoption. I think it's so important to give these insights into real birth mother experiences with closed adoption to help understand what it looked like before open adoption was common practice. I think it is meaningful for adoptees and birth parents as well, and for social workers. It's just such a good book. So I highly recommend this book. If you haven't read it, please do.
I personally, like, one of my huge takeaways was how, I know we still have a long way to go, but how much adoption has changed in some positive ways. With the focus on open adoptions, I just remember on our date night shortly after recording this, we were talking about how difficult it would be for, you know, in this person's circumstance, her birth mom's dad didn't know ever in his entire life that his daughter had a child, placed that baby.
That he had this grandchild out there. Yeah.
Well, and just as a parent, wanting to help my children thrive and succeed and not knowing something so such a huge part of her life experience at all, like for his entire life. I just feel like that's just such a shame. And I am glad that we're in a place where there's less stigma.
Mm-hmm. And there's still growth, but you're right. Definitely. It's so different. That's one thing as you read this book and these experiences, it's like, oh my goodness, thank goodness the world is changing. And we're getting more compassionate, I think, I hope.
Yeah. But, well, I loved this episode. I'm so grateful for her and again for her sharing with us.
Me too. And I feel like it just really reinforces the importance of listening and having an open heart to hearing hard experiences and maybe experiences that challenge what we thought we knew or understood to help us have a fuller picture and understanding of others. Yeah. So anyway, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Open Adoption Project. We'll be back next week with another book club episode. We've enjoyed doing these for National Adoption Month. Our next episode will be the one we were planning on for this week. We had some technical difficulties. So next week we'll be talking about Orphan Train Writer by Christina Baker Klein.
Yeah, we're excited for next week's conversation too. Thank you so much for listening.